Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me today is my co-host,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. This week, we've got a lot of things to talk about as we are in the midst of summer movie season. Let's start off with the fact that that wonderful, beloved property that will not die, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, produced a lot of news this week in regards to their cinematic universe and their plans and some casting news.
The big thing was the drop of who the alleged villain is, and it will be Steppenwolf, apparently. If you don't know who Steppenwolf is,
or didn't recognize him from the third.
The clip that they just happened to casually drop the Monday after the movie release, that guy that Luther was looking at, that guy is Steppenwolf. Again, if you don't know who he is, join the club. I've read comics all my goddamn life, and I've never heard of this dude.
He's a new guy.
Yes, he's a new guy. He's actually, he's Darkseid's uncle. If you Google him, he kind of looks like a man with like some big crazy headdress thing, mm-hmm. as opposed to what we saw in Batman vs. Superman. Granted, I know that was because he was in the Kryptonian ship and they have that liquid metal projection stuff, so he was just all grayed out. But he still looked a whole lot more demon than regular man me. But according to Birth, Movies, Death, that will be the villain of Justice League Part 1. The other drop with that is kind of spoilery. It doesn't bother me, but I'm just going to warn y'all. Spoilers if you don't want to know what may or may not happen to Justice League. So, apparently, Dark.
These have been the rumors forever, though. The rumors forever were that, like, originally it was going to be Brainiac is the villain of Justice League Part 1. And then at the end of Justice League Part 1, Green Lantern is going to come in from space and go, yo, dudes, there's this guy named Darkseid who's, like, coming from space. You might want to get your stuff together and, like, be ready because he's coming for you.
Yeah.
And so now, essentially, what you're going to have is, from everything I can tell, the DCCU's version of Ronan the Accuser, somebody who's, like, kind of close to the guy who's actually coming, who you actually want. And he'll serve his function, and then we'll move on to the guy that's been, you know, heavily teased.
Yeah, the announcement of Steppenwolf does absolutely nothing for me. The more interesting thing I found out of all of that was that the Atlanteans and the Amazons defeated Darkseid years ago, and he left mother boxes. And in the course of them defeating Darkseid, they got into, like, their little spats, because we've heard that there might be the Atlantean Amazonian war thing in Justice League, and this sounds like that's their way to tie that in, which I find way more interesting than Steppenwolf, who I know is just going to be there to get beat.
So we have to see more superheroes battling each other before they come together to fight a larger foe?
Maybe.
At least it won't look like he's holding his breath anymore.
Yeah, we get they talked a little bit about the process they're going to use to make Aquaman actually look like he's underwater, as opposed to being underwater and looking like he's just kind of sitting there holding his breath underwater. Which, I mean, it sounds cool. It sounds like something they can use, like, for flying and all, as well as the underwater stuff.
Well, the problem has been that, like, the hardest special effects to do are fire and water. And in an Aquaman movie, water's kind of a necessity.
Yeah.
And that's why I was kind of, like, when Cameron keeps talking about his magical unicorn land that is that is the Avatar sequels, like, he's going, like, Avatar 2 is going to be all about the oceans of Pandora. And I'm like, dude, I know what you did for 3D, and I know how far you pushed that technology. You're going to have pushed the water technology for CGI so far to achieve something like that, that it's not even going to be funny. So either Cameron's done it, and, like, they know about Warner Brothers knows about it, and they know how to get their hands on that kind of technology, or they're just going to the old standby of what, for example, Lord of the Rings used, what, for example, more recent example, Hail Caesar used for Scarlett Johansson's underwater scenes in her musical number, you know, green screen, and then adding the water in. But, I mean, like, when Momoa was on screen, the only thing that was going through my mind was, like, this dude's just posing for the camera.
Yeah.
Like, why not just take your staff and stab the camera and swim away as soon as you see the camera? Why look at it like you've never seen a human object before?
Right. That is a very fair assessment of that scene.
And that's why I didn't get too caught up on the fact that he looked like he was holding his breath.
Yeah, I didn't notice it until I read other people saying, looks like he's holding his breath. I was just like, he just didn't there for the camera for some odd reason. And he knows what it is. It's not like he's been underwater his whole life. But I'm interested in seeing how they're going to pull that off, because they got to make this whole movie with Aquaman. Are they going to do the way that the animated series did it, and where the Atlanteans still lived underwater, but like, they didn't actually, like, spend their time in water the whole time. They were, like, they had, like, dome houses and things like that.
But the Jar Jar Binks, the world of the Naboo.
Yeah.
The Gungans.
Yeah. And that's probably where they're going to have to go. But he's still going to have to be in water some of the time, at least to do all the cool stuff they want to do. So, this will be our first peek into that.
Because, you know, Snyder is on record as telling a Detroit radio station that, you know, Aquaman could cut Superman's skin, and he's really a completely, you know, radical character who's totally awesome, but, like, just gets made fun of because of Super Friends.
I don't begrudge Snyder for defending Aquaman, because, quite frankly, everybody's made fun of Aquaman for years. Nobody takes him seriously. I know some of the cool things he can do, but it's still more fun for me to make fun of him than to take him seriously.
That's another piece of news that we got this week, that James Wan, with no words, but just, you know, posting a picture of him on his phone with a Aquaman mural behind him, pretty much squashing the rumors that he was exiting the project after Seth Gorin Green
got let go from Flash.
And, you know, they said that they're looking to move more in the Marvel direction of making, you know, maybe paring some of these down into buddy movies instead of just doing straight solo movies.
That for some of the characters that works,
like I think for Flash and Cyborg, that does work.
I mean, I think Flash can actually carry his own movie, but if you want to put Cyborg in there, I'm fine with it. I don't think Cyborg can carry his own movie at all. Even if he shows up in Justice League and it's like the breakout star, I still don't think he's carrying his own movie.
You don't think he can be the Black Panther of the DCCU?
Look. No. No. And it's nothing against Cyborg, but Black Panther is his own thing. And
has a lot more history behind him.
I would guess they're like 10 years off from being created. But Black Panther is... the way he's built up, you can do more with him. Cyborg is just kind of like, you know what you have with Cyborg. You can do interesting things because of where we are now with technology and stuff, but... I mean, Black Panther, they got the right guy.
Cyborg to me was always like RoboCop.
He kind of is.
And I don't know how that flies in a modern setting. I mean, look at the RoboCop reboot that just died on arrival a couple years ago.
Well, that it's because it was named RoboCop. You can do interesting things with the fact that, you know, he's basically tapped into the internet 24/7 and can't shut it off, and how, what does that do to somebody and all that kind of stuff. But even with all that, I don't know if I want to see a whole movie of that.
Right. So, I mean, all of that information was interesting, and then of course we got the big reveal that, you know, your wish has been granted.
It's not really granted, but it's like
according to Birth, Movies, Death, it's pretty much like you guys. Like, I went around telling people that this was not going to be as bad as Daredevil, and it has the same Rotten Tomatoes score, And so me and Terrio are going to go sit in a room, and we're going to write this, and I'm going to be an executive producer on this. And if you have any questions, Zach, just feel free to let me know, because we're going to make sure that this gets done right this time.
I mean, yeah, if you say it like that.
Like, from the way Birth Movies Death made it sound, it was writer, producer, and co-director, basically.
I mean, they pretty much said, like, writer, producer. They said everything but co-director.
But the thing is, like, that's my issue. My issue is, how is this going to be any different than Dawn of Justice, where he brought Terrio in as soon as he was hired as the Bat to play Batman?
Well, according to Ben, he did not. He had nothing to do with Terrio. I don't know how this is any different, with the exception that now it's official that Ben is like, he's like Snyder's boss. Before it's like, you know, this is a collaboration. Now it's like, no, he's the executive producer. He's here every day. You can do what you want, but, you can't do what you want, but, because Ben is going to say yes or no. I mean, going into Batman vs. Superman, everybody's like, Zach is really collaborative. He, like, takes input and all this kind of stuff. And what we saw, that's what it looked like. It looked like Ben was giving input, helping with the screenwriting, helping Zach with some stuff, and bouncing ideas off each other. So, on paper, it's kind of, you think it's the same thing. But now it just seems like, if Ben don't want it, it ain't gonna happen. Which could be great.
My thing is that they put themselves in this position.
They did.
Because my deal would have been, I know the release date is November of 2017, but if you could have started production June 1st,
yes,
instead of like April 1st, I think you put yourself in a lot better position, because you get to see the reaction to Dawn of Justice. And you can actually make some changes to your movie. Before you go starting to film. The problem here is, when you're filming 2 weeks after Dawn of Justice comes out,
there's no time.
There's no time to make any changes.
Now, I know that they officially said they were starting production 2 weeks after.
And they sent out the start of production press release.
Yes. But we really haven't seen anything about it.
Not since that picture of him in the MOA in the costume room.
Yeah, and that was before Dawn of Justice came out. I know Gal hasn't been there because she just wrapped Wonder Woman.
And she's moving directly.
Directly over there. Cavill keeps throwing up these pictures of him training, but doesn't actually say if he's like actually over there shooting stuff. So could they have we're starting production, but we're not really starting production. We're just going to say we're keeping this date. We're going to send out this press release, but y'all ain't going to see nothing, because there's nothing to see, because we're doing some other stuff. And actually have held off until actual like shooting stuff. Like, maybe they go get B-roll and like do some second unit stuff, but like the actual stuff, they're holding off until they
fix it. I mean, I can totally see Affleck being mad, because his reputation is on the line. And yeah, he's already taken a beating for this once in his career.
That was the whole thing. My whole thing in being that thinking this movie is going to be good was that Affleck doesn't need this shit. He's like, he's rebuilt his career. He had that Ghibli period that everybody just took a dump on him. He rebuilt his career. He became this great director. He should have won
an Academy Award winner with Live by Night.
He should have already had one. He's like the darling of Hollywood. Why was he put on these tights, knowing, one, what happened, his past with superheroes,
and the Twitter reaction to his casting,
and that is this character, it is Batman, like, arguably right now the most beloved character anywhere. My whole thing was, he's only putting these tights on if he knows this movie's going to be great. So yeah, I can understand. I would be pissed too if I'm like, great, everybody loves me, but the rest of this stuff around here is like, I can't escape the stink of the rest of this. So somebody owed me something. So I
and I love his statement on the press tour. You know, and press tour stuff is very hard because these guys are traveling around the world and they can be very tired. But I love what he said about, like, we don't set out to make bad movies. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, said a lot about the fact that, like, he had to, at some point, have believed in the creative process. And, you know, we got the news this week also that Snyder's going to use a lot of green screen for Justice League, which apparently he used a lot on Dawn of Justice, although why he was shooting in, if he was just using green screen, I don't know why he was in Detroit for like 9 months.
You know, it's, I don't know. It's that thing, like, I'm pretty sure the whole final battle was just big green screen too fast. The actual Batman versus Superman fight, it's probably a lot of green screen stuff. So, yeah, actually, I don't know why they're in Detroit all that time when...
Unless they got a really good tax break to be filming in those studios.
Oh, I'm sure they did, because Detroit ain't got nothing else. so
they're kind of in the middle of some trouble there.
Yeah, so if you're like, oh, y'all want to come for 9 months? Free, everything, just come on down. But yeah, I don't know. Because I have not seen like an actual like production photo, I'm going to say that they're like, depending on actor schedules, they might have factored in this kind of time, that they haven't actually started like principal photography with the big actors yet. Maybe Warner had the foresight to be like,
well, technically you wouldn't, and see, that's why to me it was a shock that they were shooting immediately after, because I was like, it's a November 2017 release, and Marvel, for as many special effects shots as they have in their movies, they shoot basically a year out. Like, you know, Winter Soldier was filming, Civil War was filming last May. You know, Doctor Strange has been filmed this past fall in New York City and in other places. Ant-Man filmed the July before it was released. I mean, they have very special effects-driven movies, yet they only need a year.
Yeah.
Dawn of Justice took, 2 years from start of production to release in a 9 month or nine or 10 month shoot.
It was a 9 month shoot. The movie was actually done. It was pretty much done like last fall, because that's when we started hearing people saying, we've seen the movie.
Right.
So they just shot it really early and they pushed the date back. So that's why we had the big gap. But for
remember again, like, they pushed it from July of 15 to May to May of 16, and then bumped it up to March. So really, you were looking at a move of July of 15 to March of 16. So you're looking at what, a 6 month move, 8 month move?
July,
August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, 10 month.
Ten month
move. I mean, and from all reports, the movie was done, locked picture, like, in October.
Yeah, so if they really wanted to, they could have probably had it for July 15. They just had already decided to move it back, so they kept it back.
Which is crazy, because the only thing they had to compete with was Ant-Man.
There was nothing in July. Yeah, they could have put it there and been fine. Well, not fine, as we found out, but, fine enough.
That's why, to me, like, you wouldn't have to actually start shooting till the middle of the summer, if not the late fall.
And the only thing about that is, again, it would be the people's schedules if they got other things coming up.
Lord knows Cavill doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, out of the cast, the only one that really does is Ben, and he's already...
Amy Adams.
Well, yeah, but compared to the rest of their roles, you can get Amy Adams for a month. Do all her stuff.
2 weeks.
Yeah, I was being generous.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2 weeks and get her out. So, and like, J.K., he works a lot, but he's already said his role is small, and I'd expect the same for Willem Dafoe. So it's really like...
Mr. Aquaman, King...
Atlantean...
King of the... Aquaman's father.
Aquaman's father's a human, so he just has to be like some... random Atlantean, which, if you use Willem Dafoe to just be some random Atlantean, no, stop it.
First of all, to be a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to make him a good guy, a guest type cast, Yeah, fine, whatever. But make him somebody I know, because I know Willem Dafoe, and it's kind of a waste for him not to be somebody I know. But all that to say, like, the principal cast, outside of Ben, they ain't got nothing else going on. They can kind of just sit there and do what they want. Gal's already in shape from Wonder Woman. These other movies don't film for a while, so they can just sit there. And if Ben has already done Live by Night, and he's not going to do anything else for that for a while until it's closer to come out, why not just say, yeah, we're starting in April because we already have this egg on our face.
We already have the studio space.
Yeah. So we'll just say we have it. We're starting in April and just not actually start until like June. And y'all go and fix something.
Well, it'll interesting times to be sure in the offices of Warner Brothers DC's headquarters.
Yeah, I'm surprised about it. He got fired yet. But I think it's coming.
We will see. So let's talk about the other major non-MCU studio, Fox. there's this lovely movie called X-Men Apocalypse. It is the fifth X-Men movie. Fourth X-Men movie to be directed by Bryan Singer.
Yes.
It is the sixth X-Men movie in the... Well, no, it's the eighth X-Men movie because you
total,
count the...
Yeah.
Count the two X-Men, the Wolverine movies, and then if you can count what Deadpool, it's nine. Yeah, so they did the Civil War thing. They released lifted the embargo 3 weeks out, and the results are
Mix would be generous.
I haven't seen a Rotten Tomatoes score, so
last time I checked, it was like 43, 46, somewhere around there. That's been a few days, but...
And Civil War sitting at what, 90?
90. It was 90 last time I looked at it, so... yeah. Well, Civil War released it 3 weeks early because Marvel and Disney are like, this is gold, we know it's gold. I'm not worried about none of y'all saying anything bad. You would think that's what X-Men did, but judging by everything I've heard, I really think, one, they're trying to drum up buzz because... People not really talking about it.
I don't know whose bright idea it was to look at the calendar and go, we need to really release, you know, Dawn of Justice, Civil War, and Apocalypse all within 180 days of each other.
well, it's pretty much, I'm going to blame it on WB and Fox, because Marvel is already sitting there and they're like, look.
90 days, not even 180, 90
yeah,
days.
Yeah. Marvel's just like, we got this day. I don't care what none of y'all do. And until y'all knock us off the spot, I ain't moving. And they're well within their rights, and they're going to reap the rewards from this. But I think Fox did the reviews for this on... I think people got to see it on the Friday or Saturday, right after Captain America. It's because they wanted to drum up buzz, one. And in case the reviews were mixed and stuff, it gets mixed in with the Captain America stuff, and they can just go away. And then they can push it again.
That was my thought, was that they knew that they had a hot-button movie on their hands that was going to be divisive to negative, and so they wanted to go ahead and release the embargo so that the word of mouth did not hurt the movie opening weekend. Whereas if you hold the embargoes till the day before release, and then the Rotten Tomatoes score dips into the 30s, then you run into the Dawn of Justice issue of word of mouth, which, as we've seen, can prevent you from making what you want to make.
Yeah,
now, keep in mind, of course, no X-Men film has ever made $1 billion.
Yeah. I don't think this one's going to either. I never thought it would. I am intrigued to see if this strategy of going, releasing, undoing the embargo so far out actually helps them, because it doesn't have the word of mouth fresh, like Dawn of Justice did. I still think it's 3 weeks of... Well, I don't know. Because people like me that don't really care for, like, especially Days of Future Past, it's 3 weeks of us dragging the movie through the mud. But I find that we typically... People that think like me typically run in the same circles. And we don't really cross over with people that really love X-Men. So... If that were to bleed over to the general public, then that's a problem. But I don't know if that's what's going to happen.
Hey, you're ready for X-Men in space, apparently, so...
Oh, God, again, I don't really like space. Granted, I love Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like an outlier. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, Star Wars, those are outliers. I don't generally like space.
Spaceballs.
Space. Well, it's making fun of stuff. That's different. X-Men in space is like
X-Men in space.
And that's kind of how I think of it. I know that a big part of X-Men's history is dealing with the Shi'ar and the Phoenix Force. Hint, hint, you might see it in Apocalypse, and you might be mad if you like the Phoenix Force. And all that kind of good stuff that goes, that's part of X-Men lore. But I kind of like the X-Men grounded in the whole, you know, dealing with prejudice and bigotry and all this kind of stuff. I don't like that we get the same story told over and over by Bryan Singer. Hence, that seems to just be a recurring theme with him. See, Superman Returns. But I can't even fathom Bryan Singer bringing the X-Men. Bryan Singer bringing the X-Men to space. I can't imagine what that is. Because some way, somehow, he's got to make Magneto come to the good side, go to the dark side, and do that with aliens in space. I can't imagine that, but Apocalypse.
So, speaking of you know, X-Men and the X-Men universe, their version of Kevin Feige is Simon Kinberg. And Simon Kinberg has been doing some talking on this press tour, as he does for most of the press tours, unless it's Fantastic Four, in which he just stays quiet the entire time while Josh Trank goes off on Twitter.
he did some talking with Josh Trank before the Twitter stuff, like around the time the trailer came out, because they talked to Frosty.
In January. The movie came out in August.
Yeah.
And bypassed every Comic-Con before that. And didn't show us a trailer till the last week of January of 2015. It didn't show us anything again until June.
You saw the movie. You know why they did it.
And you know what? There's another movie that's following that same that same projection and that same word of mouth.
You can trash that movie later on. You're going to have your time with that one.
So, he's talking about a lot of things. Talks about the post-credit tag, or teased the post-credit tag for X-Men Apocalypse. He talked about the fact that the next X-Men movie, if there is going to be a next X-Men movie, will be in the 90s. We already know that Singer is attached to Fox's version of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So, if, you know, this was the closest time in between X-Men movies, between Days of Future Past in 2014 and Apocalypse in 2016... Mm. So, it's typically, used to be 3 years in between. So, if we don't get one again until 2019, that would make sense. Especially with the Wolverine 3 already filming. And, you know, Gambit still somewhere out there in the ether. And, you know, a Deadpool sequel. Yeah. And a X-Force movie. A New Mutants movie.
Yeah. Which they could, if they wanted to, they could make the New Mutants the 90s movie. I don't think they will.
I think you would actually do better making that present day and putting Megasonic Teenage Warhead in there.
I do. I think that is the smart thing to do, too. But, I mean, it's...
Because at least that way you can pull... I know that they're going to... That the Storm... Storm's going to show up in New Mutants, but, like...
That's right, they did say
I think that it, Megasonic Teenage Warhead is, a character people want to see more of after Deadpool, and, two, a direct pull.
Yeah.
And... Not only that, she wore the yellow uniform.
Yeah.
In Deadpool, so.
Yeah, this, like, the proper X-Men uniform.
The proper X-Men training uniform.
Yeah. I think New Mutants should probably stick around that. But, you know, it's Fox. They do screwy things. I don't know how they're going to explain this young Storm being in this present-day movie when she should be, about...
So
40.
Do we know whether or not they did your suggestion and took these young kids and brought them forward to present day?
No, they didn't do that. Of course they didn't do that. That was just... It just continues to make things...
more complicated?
Yeah.
Put some more bends in the river?
Here's why we're getting this 90s X-Men movie, which... At that point, somebody made a good point. If Nicholas Holt is in that movie... It's going to be a hard time for me to believe he's not a 40... He's got to be a 45-year-old man.
He's got to be Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah. So, They need to figure that out. But as we've seen, they have no regard for timelines. And
no, considering the fact that all the original actors were there at the end of Days of Future Past.
Yeah, so we should... Yeah,
living happily ever after.
We should be transitioning into them into the 90s, because, I mean, X-Men was filmed in 99.
Not only that, but Jennifer Lawrence has to transform into Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence is Mystique. Oh, God, every time one of those commercials come on and I see her say, "You're not kids, you're X-Men," I'm just like, why? Just stop it. I don't want to see you be Mystique anymore. Go away. I don't dislike you. I just dislike you as Mystique. Go away.
Well, the problem is that Raven / Mystique was never supposed to have this role. She was never a lead player the way that they have made her in the first class run of movies.
I didn't mind how what they did with her in the first class run, but she wasn't
the founder of the X-Men.
Yeah, she was. Well, all of this is because she is now megastar Jennifer Lawrence, which happened during the whole first class thing.
Because she shot Hunger Games and First Class pretty much back to back, and they came out back to back.
Yeah, so now she's the biggest name out there, and she has to be forefront, but her character
even bigger of a name than she's bigger than Fassbender and McAvoy.
Yes, oh yeah, by far.
And Holt, although I make a contention that Holt will be James Bond one day.
He's young now, but I can see it. I'd allow it. But yeah, stupid. Oh, we got off way on tangent. We're supposed to be talking about Kimberg and the stupid stuff he's saying.
So I mean. The thing about it is, like, the reaction in part to Apocalypse is okay to poor, but that's been kind of washed out in the mix-up with Civil War, and by the time the movie comes out, it won't be a thing that people are talking about. Part of the problem with Dawn of Justice is, from the time of the first screening to the time the movie came out, you had nothing but bad press, and that was like a week before the movie came out. And so you have this run-up of bad PR from Jump. At least they've gotten the bad PR out of the way, and now a general audience can just walk into that movie and make a judgment for themselves. And it will be interesting to see what the cinema score of that movie ends up being.
Yeah.
But Kimberg obviously was talking about The New Mutants, which, you know, again, as we said, you know, is a movie that's coming out. He talked about the next X-Men movie will be in the 90s. Talked about the fact that they have the post-credit stinger at the end of X-Men Apocalypse. And then he talked about his other Marvel property, the Fantastic Four. What did Mr. Kimberg have to say about a bright, cheery, and happy Fantastic Four without an alcoholic as a director?
He said...
No disrespect, Mr. Trank.
Yeah. He pretty much said that... Fox is still committed to making another Fantastic Four movie. They realized that the audience voted on what they thought about this Fantastic Four movie, and that the audience probably wasn't wrong, that the studio may have strayed too far away from the DNA of Fantastic Four, and maybe they can go back and make light and funny.
Maybe committing a hostile takeover of your director's movie. And slashing his budget before
you even start.
So
they drove him to the bottom. They drove him to the bottom. When he left the meeting, he knew he had this budget. He stepped on set the first day and like, "Hey, that big thing you wanted to do? Nah, it ain't happening. I go drink too. Like, what am I supposed to do?
I went from I had passed up a Chronicle 2 to do this.
And you're gonna ruin my career. Thanks, Fox. But yeah, he wants to make. He thinks. He said there's nothing wrong with the cast, which I would agree with.
I would agree.
But they can go back and make another one and actually course correct and get
that
more
tone, that branding of those kids is so toxic now. It's part of, I was explaining to a friend of mine the other night, it's the reason why Andrew Garfield isn't in Civil War. Because if Andrew Garfield's in Civil War... Retroactively, you have to make Amazing Spider-Man's 1 and 2 canon in the MCU, and Feige and company want nothing to do with those movies because they are not up to Marvel standards.
Mm-mm.
And it's the same way here. If you have all the same kids coming back and you have a script by Drew Goddard and, you know, there's this all this witty, fun banter and bright, colorful costumes and they actually, God forbid, see trees. It's gonna confuse general audiences because, like, we went from Darkness No Parents to, like, Spring Break. And it's like, what? Like, how does this work? I don't buy for a second, even before we got the news about Jordan, I never bought for a second that they are serious about going down this road. I think what they're going to do is what you've suggested and what others have suggested, which is the Marvel method of just dropping those characters in another film. Getting, if Kate Upton has a contract and it's ironclad, getting her to show up in an X-Men movie. Getting Ben Graham to show up in Wolverine 3, which is now filming. And will be R-rated. Because we need blood on the claws. But, like, that brand is so toxic. Like, that's the only way you could do it. If you even wanted to do it without recasting again and doing it again.
Yeah.
And even if you did that, you couldn't get it done before 2020, which is the window. It's a 5-year window, right? Is it 5 or 7?
I think it's 7.
Well, if it's 7, then that's 2022. Like, yeah. You've got to get the ball rolling at some point.
Well,
you can't let another 8 years pass before a Fantastic Four movie.
No, I think, well, one, I think, let's start with the fact that he wants to make, you know, fun, sunshining Fantastic Four. And let's not forget that Fox did that once before, and they sucked at it.
Twice.
Yes, twice before, and they sucked at it. Enough so that they went the other way. So, Fox has proven that we can't work with funny, sunshiny Fantastic Four, and we can't do dark, grim Fantastic Four. So, Fox, you lose. Just, you lose. But, I do think it's Fox looking at Marvel like, I know you want this. I don't really have much else that you want. I'm not giving you this. So that's why they say this. That's why they say this. And I really think, as you said, I think they're going to stick Ben Grimm in Wolverine 3 just to piss everybody off and be like, well, we used him. Now what you going to do? You can't. We're not. That 7 year, roll that sucker again.
There's a part of me that believes that while there is no love lost between Marvel and Fox, that there's a part of me that does believe that they are waiting on Homecoming. And I believe that there's a part of me that does believe that they want to see how this financially works out for Sony. And that if it does work out financially well for Sony, that they might be in a position, especially now with Deadpool.
Yeah.
Deadpool now being the X-Men spinoff that they always needed. And being a huge hit that can anchor his own franchise, that now they have X-Men and they have Deadpool and they're spinning off into New Mutants. So they have plenty of superhero properties that they can make money off of. They might be in a position to where, look, creatively, we suck at this. We weren't too good at X-Men, but at least those movies make money
for us.
So here you go. You know, every co-appearance in a an Avengers movie or whatever, you get all the money. You do a solo movie, we get all that money, and you can creatively do whatever you want. Just slap our logo on the poster and cut us a check for half of the marketing, and we're good.
From a financial standpoint, I can see that. I can, especially when you say wait to see what Homecoming does, because the reaction to Spider-Man in Captain America has been through the roof. If he's not the first thing people say, he's the second thing people say.
The concern is that you've got John Watts and you've got a young Aunt May and doing Vulture for the first time. And again, John Francis Daly, as much as I love him, has never written a PG-13 movie before. He's only written R-rated movies. And those haven't really been that successful. The Horrible Bosses movies made some money, but not, you know, Hangover-type money.
If this arrangement was Marvel is... If this was more of a... Sony's, like, having real input into this, I would be more concerned.
The way Feige sounded on the podcast on the press junket was like, "Yeah, this is our show that they're just kind of making money off of."
Yeah, they're like, I mean, we had to send notes to them, but they're pretty much like, "Oh, y'all want to do it? Okay, fine." So, because Sony knows that Spider-Man is the crown jewel, Sony knows that Marvel is going to take care of that. And if they get all the money from a solo Spider-Man movie and let Marvel do all the heavy work.
With Downey in it.
Yeah, with Downey in it. They're putting their foot in the bill, but Marvel's doing all the heavy lifting. So, I mean, pretty much everybody says these days, whatever Marvel wants to do, I trust them. They've gotten to the point where
they made a talking, a sentient tree being, plant being, and a raccoon a thing.
Yeah.
And soon we'll make a living planet a thing.
Yes, and along with Ant-Man, who I took my daughter to see Civil War, and the first thing she saw when Paul Rudd popped out the truck, she was like, "Ant-Man," and she got over the moon excited. Whereas I'm about to watch Spider-Man, and she got excited for Ant-Man. For them to do that with Ant-Man, a freaking tree, and a raccoon, yeah, we trust them. And since it sounds like Sony trusts them too, I have all the same concerns with everything you just said, but Marvel said, "Hey, we want those guys." Until proven otherwise, Marvel, you got it. So, if Sony has that amount of trust, I think it's going to work out financially for them. Now, do I think, financially speaking, if I was the decision makers at Fox, I would probably go with your route. Like, I can't do this right, but they can. If I got to foot the bill, but I get all the money back, I would do that too.
But, and I don't really have to make that much off of it because... Even if we switch to a profit sharing model, I don't really have to make all that much money off of it because I'm making bank off of Deadpool and X-Men.
I just don't trust Fox. I just think they're like, no.
Although no one can explain why the rift between Fox and Marvel is deeper than the rift between Marvel and Sony.
Like, if anything, you would think it'd be the other way around because Feige worked on those X-Men movies. That's where he got his feet wet. And him and Feige and Avi Arad, they had their breakup and was not amicable at all. But Feige went back to Sony and they kind of like, Avi, go sit in the corner somewhere. Whereas Fox, I don't know what their deal is. It's just like they're like contentious just to be that way.
Unless Marvel at some point made an offer to buy back the X-Men and it didn't work.
I don't think they would have done that just because I know the X-Men don't make the money Spider-Man does.
Well, it's either that or like maybe it's just simply the fact that the few people who are left at Marvel who were there during the 90s when they were having to sell off everything are just embittered at the fact that, you know, they sold off all these properties for magic beans, and meanwhile Fox is making money off of them.
But they had to. They had no money. That was the whole thing. So you can't really be bitter at that.
And they made most of their money. They sold most of them to New Line, which no longer exists.
Yeah, that's how. Yeah, they had when Iron Man was over there.
Cap
was over there. Yeah, and New Line just didn't do anything, and we're reaping the benefits of that right now. Financially speaking, Fox should do what you're saying. What I want is for Fox to be like, just roll over and play dead. Like, we can no longer do this. Just go ahead and take them. Or be like, here, Marvel, pay me and you can have them. And Marvel's got that Disney money. I'm like, sure. What do you want? Sure, we'll write you the check. And then they're going to double it on the back end when they make these movies. So, whatever Fox wants for them, I mean... They can't sell Fantastic Four for like $1 billion because it's not...
No.
Because Fox is ruining it that much.
Right, but think about the fact that they paid $4 billion for Lucasfilm, $4.5 billion for Marvel, and they paid $7 billion for Pixar.
They have... those are all sound investments because mm-hmm. they've made that stuff back. They're working on like 2 or 3 times over at this point.
So let's move on to the video game... industry, Angry Birds coming out soon. Your thoughts on turning is it too late to turn that game into a movie? I mean, has the moment passed for Angry Birds to be a thing, or will it be this summer's version of a Rio movie?
I think it'll be the summer version of a Rio movie. Because while most adults don't play Angry Birds anymore, and I can gauge these things because I have a 7-year-old. She sees Angry Birds, and she's already told me, I want to go see Angry Birds. I've heard that the movie's not terrible, so I'm okay with that proposition. So I think a lot of kids are going to drive their adults to go see it as opposed to it's just being off of the video game.
Now, Warcraft is coming out in June, and we're getting closer and closer to press screenings for that, which will be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look bad. The last trailer actually looks fairly good, and it got me a little bit interested. I've never played the game, so it's like, I'll go see it, but I'm not dying to see it.
And then there's Assassin's Creed, with Alicia Vikander and Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
Two of the hottest working actors today, with, you know...
I think they're actually together, too.
Yeah, Kanye song?
Yeah, that was my... I don't really know much about the game. The whole premise kind of seemed weird that he's a president and then he's like doing the Spanish
Past Inquisition. Life.
Yeah. But I think I'd have got more into it if it wasn't a damn Kanye song. If it was something else. I don't know what else, but not that. After this, I should go look. I'm pretty sure there's probably a fan cut trailer with like some other music. I'm like, that is what they should have done. But, I mean, production-wise and the talent they have, it looks good. I just don't really know much about it. The release date scares me.
Well, it's what, Christmas?
It's like 3 days. It's either 3 days before or 3 days after Rogue One. So, yeah, no. People that play video games tend to like Star Wars.
Yeah. It seemed to me to be an August movie, if anything.
Yeah.
I have a friend, several friends who are huge gamers and huge Assassin's Creed, and it just is ripe for a cinematic experience. But again, it's just the translatable problem of taking a participatory experience, which is a video game, and translating it into a narrative feature.
From everything I heard, this one, it sounded like if you were going to deal with anyone, this could have worked.
This or Uncharted.
Yeah,
so Uncharted is basically Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about that one. So I think the movie's gonna be fine. It might be the best video game movie we have. That's not really saying much because
The two Lara Croft movies were huge when they came out.
Yeah. No, most people when they bring up video game movies, they like skip over those altogether. I vaguely remember any of them, but I really don't remember the second one. I would say those would be the best. But most people go to the fallback of Mortal Kombat, which I think this movie is going to be better than at least those three. So you have that going for you. Reception is going to be the whole thing.
And, you know, box office wise, you're not in the best position.
No, I don't know why they need to move.
Because, well, I mean, it's not an episode. People aren't afraid of something that isn't an episode.
They need to be. It's still Disney and Star Wars. Move. Go to January. Just go. Drop back 3 weeks. What else is coming out in January? Another Kevin Hart Ice Cube movie? You can hang with that. It's Star Wars. As soon as people don't know what Rogue One is, but they know
to explain it to
them. I had to explain it, but they know the words Star Wars. They are going to go see it.
Indeed. And we got news on the Star Wars front this week with the announcement that in July in the UK, when Celebration happens, there will be a full Rogue One panel with Gareth Edwards, who is now going to be have a little bit of time on his hands after he gets done with Rogue One and the promotion of it. Word leaked last night that Gareth Edwards is bypassing on Godzilla 2, which is really going to like hurt the people at Legendary. Because they pretty much put this project on hold and move forward with King Kong because they were waiting on Gareth to come back after Star Wars. I can't blame the dude. I admire JJ for what he did, but he said one of the reasons why he turned down Kathleen Kennedy the first time was because he had been literally working for 8 years straight. Yeah. He hadn't stopped. because he started with, you know, doing Lost, and then pretty much after the pilot episode got the job at for MI3, that's and then right. moved directly from MI3 to Star Trek, the first Star Trek movie, which got interrupted with the writer's strike, and then moved straight from that to Super 8, and then moved straight from Super 8 into Star Trek Into Darkness. And so he had literally been working pretty much for 6 or 7 straight years and on huge tentpole blockbusters. Yeah. And of course, before that, he'd been working on Alias and that kind of thing. So he was really ready for he was planning to take a 2-year break from directing and go on vacation with his family. And then Kathleen Kennedy comes up and asks him, who is Luke Skywalker? And the rest is history.
Yeah.
That's kind of the position Gareth is in. Gareth spent a good 3 to 4 years developing and shooting and doing Godzilla, and then moved directly from Godzilla into
Rogue One,
which those are two enormously huge properties. Yeah. And if Rogue One lives up to the hype or the expectation of a brand of that brand, you know, it's not going to make, you know, $2.2 billion, no. But it may make $1 billion. Which, at that point, with a solid Star Wars film and a solid Godzilla film in his resume, he can write his ticket to go do whatever he wants. Yeah. And it sounds like what he wants to do is smaller, more intimate films after he comes back. Part of the deal for me is that I don't understand why, but apparently that Gareth Edwards' Godzilla movie is as divisive as Zack Snyder's Man of Steel. There are a lot of people who have a problem with the fact that it is a Godzilla movie, and yet you don't see Godzilla until the third act. And even in the third act, he doesn't do a whole lot of classic Godzilla stuff. And of course, the monsters that he's fighting are not Toho monsters. So a lot of... And like, I watched that movie 3 times in a theater. Like, it's hard for a modern audience to get behind that movie because of its structure. Because it is set up strictly as a Cloverfield type of, we're not going to see the monster till the very end, and at the very end, we're going to, you know, see him do his thing, but it's not going to be for very long. The promise of Godzilla 2 at Comic-Con 2014, I want to say, or was it... it was Comic-Con 2014, because they were here shooting Fantastic Four when it came out.
Okay. That's right.
The announcement at Comic-Con 14 of a Godzilla 2 with Gareth Edwards coming back promised that because they had done so well in Toho's eyes with this Godzilla movie, and because it had made a lot of money, that Toho was going to release Mothra, Rodan, and a couple of other monsters for the sequel so that you could do a version of Destroy All Monsters. Which made the promise of, essentially, everybody's complaint that there wasn't enough action in this Godzilla movie and we didn't see Godzilla enough would pretty much be ratified, because the entire movie would basically be Godzilla coming back up out of the earth again, because nature is out of balance again, because Mothra, Rodan, and company are out there wreaking havoc and destroying cities. And so basically it was going to be Godzilla, Destroy All Monsters, and everybody was going to love that because Gareth Edwards proved he can do, in that third act, great action.
Yeah.
And he gets the character of Godzilla. And Bernstein's script is, well, you know, it takes a lot of hits because Cranston dies in the movie, because Alan Taylor Johnson doesn't give a great performance by any means. He's looked at as being wooden and stiff, but the action is done really well. And so you got Bernstein still writing, but now you have to go find the new director, and that's kind of concerning, especially considering Legendary basically broke their deal with Universal to go over to Warner Brothers to do Godzilla and Kong so that they could have a shared universe and do a Kong versus Godzilla movie.
I'm not one of those people that hate Godzilla. I do think that, I didn't like the whole peekaboo Godzilla the whole way through. I understand it, but...
It's how Toho ran their movies back in the day.
See, that I didn't know. But I still would have been like, at least, like, 5 more minutes of him. Like,
Of him, or 5 more minutes of Atomic Fire?
No. Just 5 more minutes of him. Like, the thing at the end, I know you got to build to that. But, like, the one shot that always kills me is the shot where they're closing the truck door and we finally just get to see him. I don't know where you stick another 5 minutes before the end, but, like, show him doing, like, he would start to do something
cool. The train sequence?
Maybe the train sequence. Because he would start to do something cool and then you just cut away. Just give me a little bit more cool and then and I think people would have been fine. I was interested to see what he was going to do with 2 because I did think he finished it off really. I thought the movie's good. And I thought he finished it off really well. But I do understand coming off of off of the first Godzilla and now Rogue One, I wouldn't want to see anything. I just want to see the inside of my eyelids and then like something that takes me 2 weeks to shoot instead of like 7 months of my life. Well, 7 months shooting and then another year of my life. So I will not regret him for not doing Godzilla 2. It's disappointing, but I think they can...
I mean, you got John Voight Rogers doing the Godzilla movie and the King Kong movie, and if that takes off with Brie Larson, I think Brie Larson's in that. I know that Hiddleston is in it.
Yeah.
Because originally it had Keaton and JK in it, and then they nixed that and rebooted. So I know that, and I want to say Sam Jackson's actually in Kong Skull Island, but they're doing it, and if that happens to hit and become a success, and then you're doing Destroy All Monsters, if you can get another small indie director to up his game and come up and do a Godzilla 2 that, again, is a Bernstein script and has the Destroy All Monsters aspect, and that hits to some basically the same numbers as the first Godzilla movie, you're in a position to do a Godzilla versus Kong movie that'll actually, you know, work.
But they've already announced... I thought they already announced dates for these things.
They did.
Okay.
They did. And they moved some of them around. The date shifts for Godzilla and Kong versus Godzilla happened before the announcement of Gareth Edwards leaving the project. And honestly, dude, like, I think they moved Kong versus Godzilla to like 2020.
That sounds right.
Like 2019 or 2020. Honestly, if Edwards wanted to take a break, he could come back and do
that one. Yeah,
do Kong versus Godzilla.
I mean, they said the split was amicable, so he could go off, take his time, do his little small moves, and come back like and do Kong and Godzilla. That would actually
Kong versus Godzilla is going to be an issue here because they have the Turtles issue. You have to retcon Godzilla now because Godzilla is the tallest Godzilla we've ever seen, and he's very powerful with atomic fire.
Yeah.
So, Kong is just very tall, a very, very large ape.
Yeah,
like, and so either you're going to have to power up Kong to also be, like, a force of nature, or you're going to have to depower
Godzilla. I think it's going to be a combination of the two. Because Kong, I forget the scale, but going off what I know of Kong and that Godzilla, like, Kong may come up to his kneecap,
mm-hmm.
or his thigh, or something. It's not very much.
This Godzilla is 27 feet tall.
They're gonna have to. Once they started saying, "I'm like, so you're gonna retcon Godzilla." There's no other way around it. But I think they're gonna like meet them somewhere in the middle.
Alrighty, so let's move on to the fabulous House of Ideas known as Marvel. So, Captain America Civil War is about $25 to $30 million ahead of the pace of Dawn of Justice. It's right on the target line for Iron Man 3. So, it'll cross 800... It's already crossed 800 million mm-hmm. worldwide. Which it took Batman forever. Batman and...
It took him like 3 or 4 weeks to get
Batman,
there.
Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice, a while to get there. They're already at 800 million. On target to hit a billion and be Marvel's fourth billion-dollar movie. Your thoughts on that, on the box office, the reception? Are you disappointed that it's not doing Avengers money? Or, because, I think Iron Man 3 money is...
I mean, Iron Man 3 made $1 billion, so I mean, at the end, I think the goal is to get a billion. It just seemed like from all of the buzz and the early reviews and everything, this seemed like a movie that was going to cross 200 million on opening weekend. And for it to hit not even 180, I was shocked.
It did 180.
That was the projections. The actual was like 179. But I mean, again, it's like the fifth biggest opening ever. It's nothing to sneeze at, but I'm pretty sure Marvel expected to get over 2. But it's still going to hit a billion.
I think it might have if Dawn of Justice were not there.
The why that it didn't hit 180 is like, or well, over 200 is what's interesting, because there are thoughts that because Dawn of Justice came out like 6 weeks ahead, and particularly because Dawn of Justice was thrashed so
gnashing teeth, yes.
Yeah, that people were like, well, they just had this superhero movie that did this and it wasn't very good, so I'm not going to go see this one. Then there's the whole superhero fatigue thing, where we just got one superhero movie, now you're piling this one on, and people are just like, well, I'm not going to see all these movies, I'm tired of seeing superheroes. I don't know which one is true. I don't really think the fatigue thing, I think it's coming.
Well, I think that miscalculations were made, right? It's like we said earlier, like Dawn of Justice, Civil War, and Apocalypse within 90 days of each other. That's way, and if you want to throw in Deadpool, that's like 4 comic book movies within the first 5 months of the year. Like, that's a lot of, you know, one after the other. And now you're going to get a break after this. You get, you know, a break from Apocalypse to Suicide Squad, and then you get a break from Suicide Squad to
Doctor Strange.
But, you know, I was surprised it didn't do 200, but honestly, the tracking was right around 180 entire time. So like it wasn't like a Jurassic World situation where like starts tracking at like $80 million and then ends up at 210. You know,
it had been doing those things, and then these movies would overshoot that. So people were just like, it's going to do more than that. Yeah, that's what the tracking's saying, but tracking has been these last few movies. It turns out to be right for this one.
And that's not a bad thing. You know, I think the question about will people go see an Avengers movie a year after an Avengers movie has kind of been answered. I think the Disney marketing machine did the best job that they could. And it's at the end of the day, it's going to probably end up at the same place as Iron Man 3, which is in the top 5 of the Marvel movies that have been released. And that's, what, 13 movies?
Yeah.
And, you know, if Strange ends up in Ant-Man territory, which I think is possible, I think they're still in a good position with a hugely anticipated Guardians of the Galaxy 2 next May.
Yeah. I do question if having the reviews come out so early may have...
Yeah, that's a thought I had as well, like... If you keep hearing for 3 weeks how great this movie is, or does it help, or is it better to have that talk happening in the 4 days or 2 days leading up to the release?
Like, I think the Avengers, the first one, I think I started hearing the overwhelming positive reviews like
eight days before.
Yeah, and I think now they know for sure that's probably like the sweet spot. Like, they know they got a monster in their hands, but just keep it embargoed until like a week out, and then let it all pour in, and then people are like, okay, then I'll go see it. I think, 3 weeks, I mean, I wanted to see the movie, and I was just annoyed that I knew people had seen it, and I kept hearing how good it was, but I had to wait 3 weeks to do it. So I can see how that would take that.
And see,
so,
I took that as kind of them trying to get a shot in at DC.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past Marvel, but... That whole thing, the whole Marvel DC thing, I do think particularly after Apocalypse, and we see how that does, since everybody wants to have so many of these movies so much now, I know Marvel's goal is to have like 1 a quarter.
They're
going up to 3 next year, but I think they want to have like 1 a quarter. That spacing is going to be an issue now, and I think people are going to, the studios are going to have to space these out amongst themselves.
Well, I think at some point we're going to get, we have realized now with Deadpool opening big in February, with Guardians opening big in August, that, you know, and Hunger Games opening big in March at the first one did, and then opening big at Thanksgiving. Like, you don't have to put every movie from May to August in order for it to be a success, a financial success. The big primary reason why January and February and March are still dumping grounds to an extent is because half the country is still dealing with snow and winter, and it's just more difficult, you know, to get to a theater. But I think we've proven with Deadpool, with Chronicle, even with The Lorax to an extent, that if you put a quality movie out in January, February, and March, people will still come out. And I think that's where we're going to start seeing, is that we can't keep releasing three comic book movies for every month of the summer.
Yeah.
One for every month of the summer. The days of being able to do, I think there was one summer where it was like, you had an Avengers movie, you had a Amazing Spider-Man movie, and you had an X-Men movie.
It was
14. It was 14. 14 had
Days of Future Past came out in 14. So that would have been, that was probably the year, that is the year of Amazing Spider-Man 2. But I can't remember what the Marvel movie was.
May of 14 would have been coming off the heels of
Winter
Soldier.
Winter Soldier was in April, though.
Yeah.
So we had, it came out in April, then we had like 6 weeks, and then Spider-Man came out.
And then 2 weeks, then Days of Future Past.
Yeah. Like, they
you can't have those kinds of spacing issues anymore. You have to give each film has to have more breathing room.
But they've been, now that you said it, they've been avoiding like June and July. Like, there's nothing there this time.
Well, Ant-Man did the July thing last year.
Was it July? I thought it was August.
No, that was July.
It was the end of July.
And it was mid-July, July 15th. And, you know, Guardians did the August thing. You know, Doctor Strange is going to be doing the Thanksgiving thing. Thor: The Dark World did an October thing. So...
Yeah, that's right. It was late.
I mean, they have experimented with different places on the calendar, but Fox really hasn't.
No, they've been stuck in May.
The X-Men movies are always like the second or third, the next to last weekend of May, or Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
You know, Deadpool is, I think, a reaction to Kingsman.
I mean, they had no faith in it, so yeah, you just stick it there.
And, you know, and Sony, like, Sony would traditionally put theirs out in May, but they're now co-opted with Marvel.
So they're coming,
July of next year. And, like I said, Fox has mostly put their superhero movies on Memorial Day weekend. And Warner's, you know, Warner's intended originally to do Dawn of Justice in July, then moved it to a May, and then moved it up to a March, and they have Suicide Squad in August. And if I remember correctly, they just moved, they kept Wonder Woman in June, they just moved it by a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So, I think we have to get to a place where everybody has to start talking to one another. But I also think we have to get to a place where people are like, give deference to Marvel. Because Marvel has had dates, they still have three untitled dates for 2020 staked out. Like, if I'm Fox, I have to work around those dates. Out of respect, because they've earned that at this point.
Well, if they don't do it out of respect after... Well, I don't know, because Apocalypse isn't going to do $1 billion. They know it's not going to do $1 billion, so they still don't have to, like, take this trouncing that Civil War is going to give it. They don't have to... They're just going to chalk it up as the way it's normally been. But, they should... There's no reason Apocalypse shouldn't come out in, like, July. It would be way better served than July.
Or August.
Because of Suicide Squad.
But yeah, July. I still, for the life of me, can't figure out why Fox moved moved Resurgence off of the July 4th weekend.
I don't get it.
It's 20 years after. You were the biggest 4th of July opening ever for years. It's 20 years. Your film is set around Independence Day weekend again.
Yeah, it just makes sense.
It just makes sense to do it. And so, what, you were afraid of a Tarzan movie that's been sitting on the shelf for 4 years?
I don't get why they moved up. I have no idea.
Like, even if the effect shots are all done and everything, like, just
stay there.
Just stay there. Like, that extra 2 weeks is not going to kill you. And for ceremonial reasons, if nothing else.
I mean, the name of your movie is Independence Day. I know people that want to see this movie, and they expect it to come out on Independence Day. And when they ask, I'm like, no, it comes out in June.
It's like the last weekend of June.
Yeah, it's like...
the weekend before Independence
Day. Yeah, so, like, why? Just release it on Independence Day. Nobody cares what day of the week that is.
Right, exactly. All right, so let's move on to Marvel's other property that has garnered a lot of attention on Black Twitter.
Yes, very much so. So, Black Panther has been, I would say, a standout.
Praised?
Yeah, universally praised from Civil War. And off of that praise, Marvel has started to drop all these casting news about the movie. It started on, I guess, like Tuesday when they said they were casting
Lupita Nyong'o.
In talks with Lupita Nyong'o for a role in Black Panther.
Play potentially a bodyguard similar to the one that we saw in Civil War.
Yeah, I would imagine it should be something like that. There's a couple of different characters. I don't know Black Panther lore as well as I should, but it doesn't matter. I'm like, of course you go get her. It just makes sense. And she's been in Star Wars, she's been in Jungle Book. She's like, obviously
12 years.
Well, specifically with Disney. Disney has had their eye on her for a while. And it makes sense that they would keep her in there with Marvel in Black Panther. It just makes so much sense. So, I don't care who she is. It's just the right thing to do to get her in there. And then, fresh off the heels of Simon Kinberg saying, we're going to still use the cast for this new Fantastic Four movie, somebody, whether it's Marvel or his people, decided to drop, no, Michael B. Jordan is going to be in Black Panther as well.
Which means that both the Human Torch from the 05 and 07 Fantastic Four movies and the Human Torch from the 2015 movie are both in the MCU.
Yes. And that worked out pretty well for the first Human Torch. So, I did not see this news coming. I did
because it's cooler.
Well,
he was in Fruitvale Station. He's in Creed. That's his boy. You know,
it's just, but it was. I mean,
like, even if it was going to be a cameo, I figured he'd find a way to get in there.
I mean, it makes sense, but it's just like I don't know what he could be doing. He seems like he's in the position he is right now that he would be like the star for him not to be. So he's not Black Panther, obviously. So why would he do this movie? But I don't care. He's in the movie, and again, you said it. He's with Coogler, who he's worked really, really well with the last two movies.
Who we've now found out is writing the movie, co-writing the movie.
So,
which again is something he's done on each one of his projects.
Yeah, and that makes sense, and that has me excited as well. So, Black Panther has now, the character has been introduced to Civil War to fanfare. We've got Ryan Coogler, who is, everybody loves his work. He's directing and writing. Bozeman is great as Panther. We're adding Lupita Nyong'o. We're adding Michael B. Jordan.
And Feige came out on the Empire podcast and said the cast is going to be 85 to 95% African American.
Yes. So this, without even thinking hard about it, this movie is going to be like the biggest movie with a black cast ever, because it's a superhero movie, it's a Marvel movie, and people really love Black Panther.
Blackest movie since Shaft.
But it's gonna be like, but people aren't gonna have like that blaxploitation feel about it. There's gonna actually be like a good movie, and it comes out on Black History Month in February in 2018. This is there's a thing on Twitter now where the 2016 is the blackest year ever. 2018 is gonna make a run for it, starting with this movie. But like, in all seriousness, when it comes to black movies, most people don't think about black movies because they're like all black cast movies, because they're normally smaller and they deal with other things and people don't really.
Lee Daniels territory.
Something like that. Even, I mean, he gets like the butler that might get some acclaim, but most people don't really think of money making movies. Perry. a lot of people think of Tyler Perry. Rather they think of like the Butler, even though I've never seen.
I was disappointed that Lee Daniels left the Omar Epps.
The Richard Pryor thing. Yeah, that was. It's been so long, I forgot that was happening until I heard that he was leaving. But apparently, everybody else is still around. So
you get Oprah. So
I got my own things with Oprah. But all that to say, that we're going to have a black movie that's going to actually like generate a lot of revenue, and it's I don't know when people are going to make a big deal, but it is a big deal, and I give kudos to Marvel for making this happen, and I can't wait to see this movie. Like, I love Spider-Man, and I'm ready to see Black Panther before I see Homecoming. So that is, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this movie comes together.
So he's in line. Everything we know about this movie is it's going to be a geopolitical thriller, and there's the possibility that he could be playing that Jordan could be playing Man Rage, or and I'm not even going to try to attempt the Wakandan name.
There's I've seen like
basically his character is a kid whose father and family was exiled to the United States by
T'Chaka?
By T'Chaka's father.
But T'Chaka is his
father. Yeah, by T'Chaka. And the kid grows up hearing his father tell stories about Wakanda and about the Black Panther. And, of course, grows up full of hate and rage because of the fact that his father was exiled. And so as Wakanda is reemerging onto the world stage, he goes back to his native land and kind of starts leading a coup d'etat against the newly installed King T'Chilla. And that's kind of the idea there, is that he would play this insurgent basically coming in from the outside with a United States background with an English accent, coming into Wakanda and trying to start a coup against Panther, and potentially over the fact that Bucky is being housed in Wakanda.
I can get down with that. If Michael B. Jordan is going to be the villain, it's not something that we've like really seen him as before.
And you know, with Cougar directing, it'll be a sympathetic villain.
Yeah, and like he can, Marvel's got this villain problem, but this could all line up that he's actually a really good villain. I like that. There's some other characters that friends of mine have put out. One of them might be him. I didn't read about either one of them that much, but I like this idea. I hope it's something.
Well, it lines up. And the character in the comics has that history of leading a coup. So like it all lines up with T'Challa. You know, being a newly installed king.
Yeah, this is. Oh, I can't. I want to keep seeing everything that they're doing for this. Even though they're not shooting this until next year?
Next February.
I still don't understand how that shooting schedule is going to work when they're shooting Avengers 2.
Avengers 3 and 4.
And he's going to be in. I know he's going to be in those. And he's going to shoot Black Panther.
Well, they came out, Feige came out and said that Natalie Portman is, in fact, not going to be in Thor Ragnarok, and that there's only, like, two scenes set on Earth.
Woohoo!
And that it's pretty much all set in the cosmos. That starts shooting in July down in Australia.
Okay.
And that Civil War, that Spidey will also start shooting in the summer. For Homecoming.
They're shooting in Atlanta?
Yeah. Okay. And then, and of course, they're already done with production on, or getting close to being done with production on Guardians.
Yeah.
Which is their other 2017 movie.
Yeah, because Kurt Russell just left this week, so they should be wrapping in like the next couple weeks. It's a good time to be Marvel.
Indeed it is. So, Chad, I saw that there was some news about the Oceans franchise. Would you like to share that information with our listeners?
Well, if you listened here before, we've talked about
a long time ago.
It's been I guess last year sometime. They're going to reboot the Ocean's 11 franchise with this time in the vein of Ghostbusters with all women. We knew that they were going to have Sandra Bullock in it. We didn't know much else. We didn't know if they were going to be like a complete reboot and not acknowledge the George Clooney movies or if there would be some tie. Well, yesterday they said that Jennifer Lawrence would join the cast.
And talks to join Gary Ross, who is her director from Hunger Games.
Oh, I didn't know it was him, but okay. But the point of that would be that Sandra Bullock's character will actually be Danny Ocean's sister, which is George Clooney's character, which would mean this is a tie to the old movies and not a complete reboot and scrapping.
And that Lawrence would basically play the Brad Pitt character.
Ah, so she's the second in command. Okay. So we got two of the supposed 11, and it's going to link back to George Clooney's Danny Ocean. So if we have cameos, there will actually be like Danny Ocean and whatever Brad Pitt's character's name and stuff was from there. Now, we say all that to say, at this point, I'm just going to step back and I'm going to let Brian have the floor.
So you're telling me, Chad, that they're doing a movie almost a full 10 years after the last Ocean's movie, in which one of the characters is tangibly related to a character from the other films, leaving open the door for a crossover possibility and acknowledgement of the previous films?
Yes.
Well, how about that? Doesn't that just seem like a novel idea? Doesn't it just seem like, you know, that the new Oceans, all-female Oceans movie is not going to be overburdened with ties to the Brad Pitt and George Clooney movies? You know, doesn't it seem like it's not going to be that hard now to have Don Cheadle just walk around and do a bad British accent and call him by the same character name?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it seem like really easy?
Incredibly easy.
Yeah. One line of dialogue. That's pretty much all it takes. Don't even really need a full-fledged cameo from Clooney to make the point. There's another movie over at Sony that I think really probably should have taken notes from this.
What movie is that?
That would be the Ghostbusters reboot.
Oh. You mean the reboot that's...
that has all the original characters in it by different character names?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one.
The one that has a director going around saying that he's met a bunch of a-holes on... he started all the a-holes on the internet?
Yeah, he did say that. Yeah. Yeah.
And that totally leaves open the possibility at some point for them to do a crossover with the all-male cast, or having the all-male cast, you know, members of the all-male cast pop up in this new female Ocean's movie. Especially if it's Danny Ocean's sister.
Yeah, so you're going to get a George Clooney cameo on this, without a doubt.
Right. So why are we not doing this for the Ghostbusters sequel?
So you're saying you want to see Bill Murray as Peter Venkman come and talk to these ladies about ghosts and stuff?
I am saying that I honor and respect the fact that Murray wanted to do a cameo to kind of get the internet off of the back of these ladies and to kind of add some validity to it. The problem is, he's not Venkman. And I'm going to have to sit there, and you're going to have to watch me sit there as they go off with different character names, and they act like 30 years and two movies don't exist. And I'm sick and tired of this idea that because I don't like this idea, and because I'm booing the movie, that it makes me a sexist. I'm not against the idea of an all-female cast. Go look at that Oceans movie. My issue is the fact that they have put time, energy, and effort into making sure that they have total disregard for 30 years and two movies. And that's my problem. When with one line of dialogue, not a cameo, not an Easter egg of a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man pop vinyl somewhere, like, just with a line of dialogue, you can say that Chris Hemsworth's character's name is Oscar. And immediately everybody's going to know who that is and where that came from. and who his parents are. Right? I mean, we're dealing with Star Wars where, like, parentage is a huge thing. Right? Like, I've said it on this podcast before. Imagine if Hanlon, Fisher, and Ford were in Star Wars but had different character names.
Yeah,
that would the internet would be lit on fire. And that's the same way here. Like, I don't have a problem with Feig. I love his work. I'm a huge Freaks and Geeks fan. I'm a huge Heat fan. I'm a huge Bridesmaid fan. And I'm a huge fan of the work of what these young comedians have done. These female comedians have done. My problem is you're going out of your way to act like the other movies didn't happen. And that's offensive to me as a moviegoer when the problem isn't like a retcon problem that would be so complicated to fix. Bill Murray, like Sigourney Weaver's character had a baby with one of her composer friends, and his name was Oscar. And the last time we saw Murray and Sigourney Weaver, I believe they were together at the end of Ghostbusters 2.
Yep.
So you could conceivably, for the second time, have them actually together at the end, and have them having had a daughter. And having that daughter be an astrophysicist, who could be played by, what's her name?
The lead?
Not McCartney.
Wig.
It's an easy fix. And if you want to have a passing of the torch, you can have a passing of the torch. Because you have three of the living scientists who you can have them pass the torch to. Hey, Oscar. Hey, Lizzie. Here we go. Here are your proton packs. Go do this. Now, Feig's on record as saying he wanted to play in a world where ghosts had never existed before. Here's my answer to that. You remember that scene in the original Ghostbusters where Rick Moranis gets mauled by the demon dog in the restaurant? And everybody looks up for like 2 seconds and then goes back to doing what they were doing before. Yeah. It's a reference to the fact that New Yorkers are tough and that New Yorkers don't pay much attention to anything else going on around them. So you could potentially do a thing where like, yeah, the whole ghost walking around the streets of New York happened in both 1 and 2. And yeah, the Statue of Liberty walked around in Ghostbusters 2, but no one talks about it and no one remembers it, especially with how transient people are in and out of New York.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't have to have had, like, I know that those movies exist. I'm a fan. You're using the same logo. You're using a similar type of uniform. You're using a similar type of proton pack. You're using Slimer. Like, you're not divorcing yourself completely from the intellectual IP, yet you're trying to ignore the fundamentals of the intellectual IP. And I just don't. And when this news hit last night, it was just like, wow. Like, the Oceans franchise has been dead for 10 years, and yet they're resurrecting it, not completely rebooting it, and acknowledging that the previous three movies happened with one line of dialogue. And Feig's been taking crap for
like a year.
Because he decided to do an all-female Ghostbusters. And again, let me just reiterate, I think too many people are caught up in this idea that fanboys are angry because it's all girls. I don't think there's anger just because there are those sexists on the internet who are mad. But like, for the most part, I think most people who are like me who are just like, acknowledge that the other stuff happened. And For me, a worrying sign is the fact that we've known about this movie for 2 years. They shot last summer in Boston, and we didn't see a trailer till April for a June release, and we haven't seen a new trailer yet, and I'll be dadgummed if I haven't seen a single TV spot.
No, I haven't seen any.
What does that remind you of, Chad? A movie that debuted a trailer in January on a random Tuesday and then didn't debut another trailer till, like, June for an August release.
That would be the Fantastic Four.
And would you like to remind people how many Razzies the Fantastic Four ended up receiving?
I don't remember, but it was a lot.
Like 6 or 8. There are more dislikes on the Ghostbusters trailer on YouTube.
It's the most disliked trailer on YouTube, yeah. Oh, my. Man. I'm not really adding anything to that. Except to say that I have noticed that we haven't seen anything new from Ghostbusters since their trailer. And I think it's like...
And they had a freaking fan event at a theater a la Marvel to debut their trailer.
That's right, they did. This is like, what, early June, right? Mm-hmm. So we're like less than a month out. And we haven't
we're less than 3 weeks out.
Yeah. I don't
know. It's like June 18th or June 12th, something like that.
Let's see. I thought it was sooner than that. If it's June 12th, they need to give us something like now.
I mean, like, and maybe it's a situation where Tim Rothman and company are gun-shy now after the reaction to the first trailer, that they are being very careful now about how they market the movie. But you still have to spend your marketing budget. You still have to market the movie. Look at Amazing Spider-Man 2. Like, they still threw money at marketing, even though they knew what they had. Like,
wait, it's July. This thing says July. I could have sworn it was June.
I could have sworn it was June as well. IMDb has it listed, or Box Office Mojo has it listed as June. As July, I mean.
I just Googled it, so let me see. Where is IMDb?
And again, like, all you have to do is make Kristen Wiig, you know, the daughter of Venkman, and, like, have the original character show up as the original characters, and I'm happy.
Yep, July 15th.
Okay. So, I mean, that's more reasonable, that it's a little far out for TV spots and such, but... Yeah, April for a July release is still way late.
Yeah. So, but they still need to start giving us stuff like now.
Right. I mean, it's just... and that makes me believe that maybe, like I said, maybe Sony is starting to get a little gun-shy about...
Well, yeah, Sony doesn't need any more bad press.
Not after the leaks. So... Alrighty, well, that'll do it for this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter @BCWTigerFan.
And I'm @TheMistTheory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant day.